Today the 4th of May 2008. We start today the lesson number 3, the history of Buddhism in Vietnam, which is the first part. Before we begin the lesson, we pray to the Buddha 3 times. Nam mô Bổn Sư Thích Ca Mâu Ni Phật. Nam mô Bổn Sư Thích Ca Mâu Ni Phật. Nam mô Bổn Sư Thích Ca Mâu Ni Phật. We start the first part of the lesson of history of Buddhism in Vietnam. This lesson is quite long, but we need to learn more about that, because truthfully this course has been devised by a monk in Vietnam in 1950. So he emphasized in the history of Buddhism in Vietnam. And in fact, most of you people have ancestors in Vietnam. So we should learn something more about that. Summary, first introduction. Buddhism has been present in Vietnam nearly as long as in China. In fact, it has also moved up and down with secular history, although never been eradicated completely. You remember the history of Buddhism in China we learned last time? There was up and down, and sometimes the government was really mean, and they killed the monks and things. So they tried to eradicate Buddhism completely, like in Afghanistan, in Pakistan nowadays. You don't see any more Buddhism over there. Although these countries were Buddhist at the time, and we still have some remnants of the Buddhism over there. Truthfully, in Vietnam, the Buddhism went up and down with the history, but it never went away completely. Main subject, Buddhism started to enter in Vietnam. Most people, especially the European, they didn't understand much about Buddhism in Vietnam. In fact, the whole history of Vietnam. The reason is that very few English translation has been made. And if you don't speak English, most people in the world will not understand you. That is, which has not been translated into English, has not been known much. There was really writing in Vietnamese, but Vietnamese is Vietnamese, and most people in the world don't understand Vietnamese. So hopefully you guys will spread out this word. Buddhism start to enter in Vietnam. You remember we say that Buddhism start to enter in China in around during the first era. That is the 4th century. Buddhism started 500 years before that. It will start with Shakyamuni in India. In fact, in India and Nepal. And then it spread out. It spread out, and many people in the Silk Road, that is what we call by the Middle Asia, have already known Buddhism. But people in China and Vietnam have not known Buddhism until around the 4th century. How did it go into Vietnam? There was two roads to enter in Vietnam at the time. Nowadays we have jets and internet, we can communicate easily. But in the time, there was no. In fact, if you want to go out of your village, it will take the whole day. First, the road of entrance. First, Vietnam is the crossroad of India and China. Easy to understand. If you look at the map, you see that Vietnam is right in the crossroad of India and China, if you go by sea. If you go by land, you don't meet with Vietnam. So there were two ways to spread to Vietnam. From the South Sea, the monks from India will go to Vietnam. Or from the north, that is Chinese. From the South Sea, we have Maharajivaka. That is Mahakibuk. Mahakibuk was one of the Indian master, the first one who went into Vietnam at the time. And you remember, Vietnam at the time was not called Vietnam. It was Giao Chi, Giao Châu. And Zhaozhou belong to China nowadays. In fact, you know, it is in the Guangdong, Guangxi area. So it's not wrong to say that Vietnamese were Chinese. In fact, we were all were, most of you. Unless you have ancestors in the south, that is, you know, you belong to the Cambodian or to the Champa. So Mahajivaka was the first one, you know, who went into Zhaozhou, that is, into Vietnam at the time. He spread out some sutra. And then Tsongkhapala. Tsongkhapala, the name in Chinese is Khương Tăng Hội. Truthfully, Tsongkhapala means Tăng Hội. Now, Khương, because he's from Sogdia. You know Sogdia? Of course you don't. Did you play the Silk Road online? Where are you people? The Silk Road online? You don't even know that?
I know what the Silk Road is.
It's free. In fact, you know, there's also a Vietnamese version. And the people in Vietnam play a lot of it.
Can you play it?
The Silk Road online. Go check it. Go check on the web, Silk Road online. You can download it free. No, that is just Final Fantasy, thing like this. But you play on PC. And, well, history. You play on PC and you learn a lot about the history of the Silk Road. That is this area. There are some chapters about Taklamakan, the desert, Uruk-hai. Oh, you have to learn. You don't even know that? Oh, go play. It's free. And in fact, you know, if you like it, you go to the Silk Road online in Vietnam. There's a site in Vietnam. They will let you download the phone in Vietnam. And then you can read in Vietnam and you can play with all people in Vietnam. You don't know it? Man, I'm old and I know it. Where are you? Where have you been? Okay. Remember, Silk Road online. Easy, right? Don't be afraid, because this was invented by some company long time ago, like a couple of years, 5 or 6 years ago. So they keep on being up, and there are millions of players in the whole world nowadays. With different versions. The European version, you play the European version, it might be better. But the Vietnamese version is sometimes good for you too. Because most of the players who play the Vietnamese version, they stay in Vietnam. You can communicate with them if you like, or you know, you can learn more Vietnamese tongues. Because the phone, you know, will be in Vietnamese. But if you don't know how to speak Vietnamese, so say, get the European version. It's free. I downloaded it, but I didn't have time to play that much. They play too well. Yeah, these kids, they play too well. I just, you know, put my first foot, the second foot, and you know, they kill me that way. Ooh. But try to play. That learn, that teach you. If you want to, well, that teach you about the history of the Silk Road. Because if you don't understand the Silk Road, there are information on the web. But sometimes, you know, it is a little boring. But if you learn by playing like that, by role playing, you learn more. So Tsongkhapala, Khương Tăng Hội, the name is translated into Chinese, Tăng Hội, and he's from Sogdia. Now, if you go to on Silk Road, you know, you understand where he was. Okay, Sogdia was one of the countries in the Silk Road, destroyed, disappeared, kaput nowadays, no more trace. But in history, Sogdia was present, and this monk, you know, Tăng Hội, was from this that country, Sogdia. So the Chinese call them Khương Tăng Hội, mean Tăng Hội from Khương Cư. Khương Cư is a Sogdia. Khương Tăng Hội was a very good monk. He went to Vietnam and he wrote, truthfully, you know, he translated the Lục Độ Tập Kinh, which is the grown up have already learned. Lục Độ Tập Kinh means the Sutra of the Six Paramita. The Sutra of the Six Paramita. And he explained the first part of the Anapanasati Sutta. The King Amman Thuy, which the grown-up is studying now. See, he was a very good monk. In fact, you know, he went to China and he stayed with the Ngô. You remember the last time he said about the Three Kingdoms? He went with the Ngô and the king over there, he, Tsongkhapala, he performed some miracle about the Sari, Sarisa. You know the Sari? Sari is some remnants of the either the Buddha or the big disciple. Some now they know if you die, they burn you, you have some, just a remnant. But the remnant of the Buddha, we call them Sari, Saloi. So he performed some miracle about it, and the king of Ngô at the time no believe in it, so allow him to build the temple in China. So from Sophia he went to Vietnam and translate some sutra, taught some monk in Vietnam, and then he went to China. Kalaruchi or Chi Kung Lương, Chi Kung Lương, he translated some sutra. Chi Kung Lương Kalaruchi. Kalaruchi translated the what we call by the Saddhamapundarika Samadhi Sutra. Not the Saddhamapundarika Sutra we learn nowadays. We call them the Lotus Sutra, not that one. Because Lotus Sutra was one of the first of the Mahayana Sutra translated. Kalaruchi translated that sutra. So these three monks who came to Vietnam from India. From China, Mobak. You see, Mobak doesn't have the Sanskrit name because he's from China. He wrote the Li Hoặc Luận. Li Hoặc Luận, and then he taught a lot of people. Many monks from the north, that is from China, went and teach people. Now, the Buddhism started to enter in Vietnam. So, in the first period of entrance, we have Mobak, we just heard about it during the Han. The Han, you see, the Han was one of the first dynasty of the Chinese. Then Khương Tân Hội, we just learned about it. And lastly, Maha Kỳ Vực in Chi Kung Lương in 3rd century. So the Chinese went first, and then the India came later. And the latest one was in the 3rd century. So what kind of Buddhism did they transmit it? The school admitted all the Chinese school. We will learn about them later in three lessons in the 10 Buddhist school. Although Thiền was the first and strongest school admitted by Vinitaruchi. Vinitaruchi, disciple of the third patriarch, Tang San, Sankha. We learned last time in Chinese Buddhism, the sixth first Zen patriarch, he was the third, Sankha, who wrote the Faith in the Mind. You can find it on the web now, Faith in the Mind. So this monk, Vinitaruchi, was the disciple of the third Chinese patriarch during the Tang Dynasty, which was the most flourishing period of China in literature, in religion, in everything. Wong Won Thong transmitted the one gazing method. Wong Won Thong went to Vietnam then and transmit the one gazing method. Because before they learn about Buddhism, they learn mostly from the teaching, that is the sutra only. But then this monk who come in, Wong Won Thong, transmit one gazing. One gazing means he just sit in front of the wall, sit like this. And that was the method of Bodhidharma. Remember last time we learned about Buddhism in China, we said about that already. So it was new to Vietnam, because Vietnamese monks say that, well, we have to practice something, to pray, to burn incense, to do something. But this guy, he just come and then sit down, look at the wall, don't say anything, don't do anything. So what is it? Come from the one gazing method, the big one. So the first of the master and the different school in Vietnam, these are the school transmitting Vietnam, and especially in the Thiền, that is the Zen. So Zen was really flourishing in Vietnam. It is not Tịnh Độ, not Niệm Phật. Nowadays people Niệm Phật because they don't understand. If I ask people to sit down and look at the wall and sit down like that, they think that, it goes somewhere else. So the first school is from Vinitaruchi. Vinitaruchi was disciple of the third patriarch. Then Wong Won Thong transmitted the one gazing method, and then we have also Thảo Đường, who transmitted the Thảo Đường school. the Thao Dong in Soto Zen and the Lam Tế Rinzai Zen later. We learn about them later. Progressively, so basically, you know, all the school present in the world has been admitted, will be admitted into Vietnam, including the Tantra school. That is what we call by the secret teaching. The people who do the mudra and then saying some word and you don't understand anything. Buddhism under the Lý Nam Đế, now you have to learn to understand about the history of Vietnam, otherwise you know, you might not be able to understand. First, I just remind you about the history of Vietnam. Before the history, we have the prehistory. That is a fabulous period. You understand what does fabulous mean? Not real. Try not to find, you know, some proof about it. That is like, you know, the people from Vietnam, you know, come from the Lạc Long Quân, the King Lạc Long, which was the dragon, and Madame Oker, and then these, you know, these two, you know, married together, and then Oker, you know, give birth to a sack of 100 eggs. And these 100 eggs, you know, become ripened and then give birth to 100 sons. 50 of the sons, you know, follow the father and go into the sea or to the seashore. And then 50 went with the mother to the mountains area. Okay, now you see that it's fabulous, right? You cannot give birth to an egg is 100 of them. But basically, you know, that was a fable about the history. Where did Vietnamese people come from? So that is the reason why, you know, now you call, in Vietnamese, you have a word, you call them đồng bào. Đồng bào. Now you translate into compatriot. But compatriot does not mean đồng bào. Đồng means chung, to common. Bào means the bag. So đồng bào means belonging to the same bag. You understand now, right? So why did Vietnamese call them đồng bào? Each other call them đồng bào. If you are Vietnamese, the other guy, Vietnamese guy will call you đồng bào. Why? Because you belong to the same bag from Lạc Long Quân and Oker. Now after that, you know, they will transmit into different kings. And the King Hùng, Hùng Vương, last like 18 different 18 kings. So it was a long period. And then, you know, they go into the occupied by the Chinese people. So with the Trưng Vương, then Bạch Triệu, and these are all small general only. They couldn't do anything, you know, really big. And there was more people at the time, like Phù Đổng. Phù Đổng, you will learn about that later on here. In Phù Đổng, there was the Chinese, you know, occupied Vietnam, Giao Châu at the time. And then there was in the village of Phù Đổng, a boy, you know, who was born and who didn't say anything from birth. So the parent was really sad, because if the boy, you know, was born and then he didn't do anything, he just eat and then sit down like this. Don't do anything. And then someday, you know, the king say that, well, the Chinese, you know, coming in. Now we need some general, because at the time, you know, there was no, like, a regular soldier, right, conscript and thing. So whenever there was some problem, something, you know, they would try to get the young man to become soldier. So this boy, you know, suddenly, you know, spoke out and said, "Mama, tell him to cook me a big pot of rice." So he said, so the mother suddenly, you know, heard him saying it, did it right away. And then when after he ate the whole pot of rice, he yawned and then he saw and then he suddenly, you know, sprout to like a 10 chuong at the time. Chuong means 2.5 meters. So 10 times like that means 25 meters high. Like a transformer, boom, like this, right? Oh, and then he get out and then he get some, pull up some bamboo and he shake it and the bamboo transform into the weapons, iron weapons. Hey, that's in the fable, right? And then, you know, he get out, and then suddenly, you know, appear iron horse, big iron horse with wings. So he jump on it, and then he get out, and then he kill all the Chinese. That's one of the fable of Vietnamese people. And then after he kill all the Chinese people, He rode his flying horse into the sky. He disappeared. People know, venerate him and call them Phu Đồng Thiên Vương. In fact, you know, in Vietnam, in the north, in the this village of Phu Đồng, they still have a festival every year. So after that, you know, they go into Lý Nam Đế. Lý Nam Đế was one of the first Korean king. Historically speaking, Lý Nam Đế, that's the first dynasty of Lý. And then, you know, they, after just a few years, the Chinese come in and we have this, we call the first occupation, 300 years, more than 300 years. Because Zhao Châu, you remember, belonged to the Guangdong, Guangxi area of China and Mayan nowadays. So the Han, you know, went down and then occupied them. They really, you know, didn't really occupy, but then they make a vassal. That is, you have, you know, to pay tax to them, to venerate them, things like this. So you understand now, this period. So the first period in the Vietnamese real history, you know, flourishing, Buddhism, flourishing. The first period, we have the Pháp Hiền, disciple of Vinitaruchi, spread Buddhism into the mass. You remember the first, previously, we have this monk Vinitaruchi, who came to Vietnam. But then you know, he transmitted into Pháp Hiền, he transmitted his teaching to Pháp Hiền. Now Pháp Hiền spread it into the mass. First, you know, when Vinitaruchi went in, came in, he just talked to some monk. And one of them is the Pháp Hiền. Now it spread into the mass. The second period, now we have the influence of the three missionaries. Missionary means the group of people who went and spread out Buddhism or some other religion, if you want to. During the Tang in China, the first group, the first missionary is Minh Viễn Huệ Mạnh Vô Hành. These are three monks from China. They went to Vietnam and then spread out more Buddhism. You can learn about them later because the lesson is very long, so I cannot dwell too much on it now. The second group, you know, was from China. So the first group of missionaries, you know, were from China. The second group is from India, the Dam Nhuận Chí Hoàng from China and Thangavama Sangavaman from India. The second group, the second wave coming in. And the third was not really, you know, missionary coming from coming to Vietnam. But these Ping Jim, you know, they came from Vietnam to India. These were monks who went to India to try to learn about Buddhism and try to bring back some sutra. These were written in the I Ching. You remember last time we learned about that? There was two very renowned monks in the Tang Dynasty in China, the Huyền Trang and the Nghĩa Tịnh, I Ching. Nghĩa Tịnh, you know, wrote in his book Nam Hải Ký Quy about these monks. He met in India. He met in India more than 50 monks. And among them, six of them, you know, were from Vietnam. So, these Vân Kỳ, Mộc Xoa Đề Bà, Quy Sung, Huệ Diệm, Chí Hành Nghiêm, Đại Phạm Đông. Now, the third period under the Lý Nam Đế enforced occupation, that was more than nearly 400 years. This period, during the third period, the Vô Ngôn Thông, is the monk from Guangzhou. From Guangzhou, learned with Bạch Trưởng. He was one of the disciples of Bạch Trưởng. Bạch Trưởng was a disciple of Ma Sư. Ma Sư was big monk in China also. If you learn about the history of Buddhism in China. So Vô Ngôn Thông was a learned monk with Bạch Trưởng. And he went to Vietnam in 820. To the Kiến Sơ Temple at Phu Đồng, Bắc Ninh. Phu Đồng is the village where there was the fabulous guy, you know, I just told you about. Nowadays, you know, in fact, if you go to Vietnam and go to Bắc Ninh, you still have this festival once a year, and people celebrate it. And what he did do? We already said that he transmitted the one gazing method, right? So he went to Vietnam, he was Chinese, but when he went to Vietnam, he just sit down and look at other world. Nobody understood the word. Of course, he didn't say anything. Then he transmitted it to Cảm Thành, then Thiện Hội. So he started this lineage of Vô Ngôn Thông. That is the second lineage of Zen Buddhism in Vietnam. The first was Vinitaruchi. You remember that. You have to remember them because this is history. The second is Võ Nguyên Thông. Võ Nguyên Thông transmit to Cảm Thành, and then Cảm Thành transmit to Thiện Hội. After that, you know, the Buddhism under the Ding and the Lê. Now, this dynasty, after the first occupation of China, the Ding, Ding Tiên Hoàng. Ding Tiên Hoàng was the one, the Lao Tập Kiện. When he was young, when he was small, he was like a buffalo trainer or buffalo care, taking care of. He took care of the buffalo, like many kids in Vietnam at the time. The buffalo used to plow the field, so he took care of that. But he had many friends, many other kids, and he claimed that he was like a boss, and all the kids, you know, was like a soldier. And then, you know, he took on this reed which had flower, big, long reed like this. And when they make flower, they spread it out, and it's all white. So this guy, you know, pick up on this, pretending that this was like the flag of the general. So he tried to fight with all the kids, and he played with the kids, all the village. And then since he win, he said, make now a party for you. And then he slaughtered a buffalo to eat, to cook and eat with all the kids. So the kids like it. They have some meat to eat. And then when he come home, you know, the uncle was really angry because he slaughtered a buffalo without asking for anything. So the uncle tried to chase him. And then he ran away. He ran away, and then he gathered with all the people. And then he gradually became a big general, a big leader. And this leader, you know, chased the Chinese from Vietnam. And he became king at the time, King Đinh Tiên Hoàng. Đinh Tiên Hoàng, so the first king of Vietnam. That means that, you know, he didn't have a learned background, right? He was just a general. He didn't know much about the war, you know, the teaching or whatever. That's after the occupation, the Đinh overview, most prosperous period for Buddhism. That period was very prosperous for Buddhism. Ngô Chinh Lưu became Buddhist Pope Quang Việt during lay occupation of Đại Tạng King. Two things. During the Đinh Kings, Ngô Chinh Lưu became Buddhist Pope Quang Việt. Now, if you don't understand, don't know about the history of Vietnam, it's difficult now. Because Ngô Chinh Lưu, he is the grandson of Ngô Quyền. Ngô Quyền was one of the big general who defeated the Han people on the river Bạch Đằng. He defeated the Han people. He was a big general because the Han, that is Chinese, keep on coming back, trying to. So many generals tried to fight back, and Ngô Quyền was one of them first. So Ngô Chinh Lưu, the monk, he's a monk. His Buddhist name is Chinh Lưu, but he's from the family name Ngô. Ngô Quyền. He's the son of the guy who is the son of the brother of Ngô Quyền. You understand? So he's not really the grandson, but he belongs to the same generation. And since, you know, properly, you know, his father should succeed Ngô Quyền at the time. But then somehow, you know, there was some usurpation at the time. You remember the history? There was always usurpation. So Ngô Chinh Lưu, you know, become a monk. And later on, the King, you know, make him the first Buddhist Pope, Quang Việt. You see, Vietnamese have Pope also, but Buddhist Pope, and the first Pope in the world in 10th century. See it? You learn something now. So the first Pope, Buddhist Pope, was present in Vietnam in the 10th century. And then during the Lý, appropriation of Đại Tạng King, Tripitaka from China. Now we have real Buddhism now. That the king, you know, bring a missionary to China and bring back the Tripitaka, already translated into Chinese. Now we just say that the Buddhist Pope Quang Việt Supreme Master, we call them Supreme Master Đại Sư, is the fourth patriarch of Võ Nguyên Thông. So he belonged to the lineage of Võ Nguyên Thông, the second sect of Zen in Vietnam, and he is listed disciple of Vân Phong, and he stayed at the Phật Đà Temple. At 40 years old, he was summoned by Đinh Tiên Hoàng. Đinh Tiên Hoàng was the first king of the Đinh. You remember? The guy, you know, who killed the buffalo and became king. And he was the best of the pop title. That is the king. You remember at the time, the king was like a god. He can do whatever he wants. He says something, people follow. You don't listen to, you're dead. So he called him in, and then he said, you become pop. So he became pop. Next year, he granted the Khuôn Việt the Supreme Master title. He was pop, but then he didn't have the title of Supreme Master. Supreme Master means the teacher of all, of everyone. Because pop just means like in the hierarchy, he's higher. Later on, when Đinh Tiên Hoàng was there, and the Lý King coming in, the Lê King, he was also respected, and died after he transmitted the Xiêng to Đa Bảo. Now the second monk was Đỗ Thuận. Đỗ Thuận was a no origin, and he was disciple of Long Thọ Phụ Trì, and he was called Master Đỗ by King Lê Đại Hành, and he was his advisor also. Died at 76 years old, he was the 10th patriarch of the Vinita Ruchi branch. So you see, in this time, under the Ding and the Li, both Vinita Ruchi and Bồ Môn Thông branch flourished. General observation, Buddhism under Ding and Lê was prosperous because the monks were learned scholars. As we are virtuous, once the monks are learned and virtuous, that is, they didn't seek the fame, they didn't seek the wealth, they are respected by all, and Buddhism can prosper. Now the fourth, we come into Buddhism under the Li dynasty, from 1010 to 1225. That is the area of the Li dynasty. Li dynasty was the most prosperous period for the Vietnamese Buddhism. It was compared to the Tang dynasty in China. So if you learn about history of Buddhism in Vietnam, when they say about the Li, Phật giáo đời Li, Buddhism under the Li, it was the most prosperous, prosperous time. And in fact, many of the king, Li king, became monk in later life. Now, under Li Thái Tổ was the first king, we come from the first one to the second to the third thing. Under his reign, born Lý Công Uẩn, the king Li Thái Tổ was born Lý Công Uẩn, and he was adopted by the monk Lý Khánh Vân from Cổ Phật Temple and studied with Vạn Hạnh monk. So you see, he had a background. When he was small, he was adopted by a monk, he studied with the monk. So being Buddhist, he favored Buddhism. And so when he became king, he sent a missionary to China for more sutras. Most notable monks under his reign was Vạn Hạnh, Đa Bảo, Sùng Phạm, all belong to both the Vinita Ruchi and Bồ Môn Thông branch. That's peculiar to Vietnam, because it's like Buddhism in Vietnam keep on prospering, that is spreading, or standing up a little bit, but never destroyed completely. And all the branches were favored. They don't favor one branch more than the other. The Vạn Hạnh master under the Lý Thái Tổ, Vạn Hạnh. Now, if you learn about the history of Buddhism, we call them Sư Vạn Hạnh. Sư Vạn Hạnh means Monk Vạn Hạnh. In fact, in Vietnam, before 1975, there was even a road in Saigon, the name is Sư Vạn Hạnh. Sư Vạn Hạnh is the road just in front of the Ấn Quang Pagoda. So Vạn Hạnh master was very renowned. He's from the Nguyễn family. His family name is Nguyễn, and he was from the Cổ Pháp village, took vows of monkhood at 20 years old with Thiền Ông, who belonged to the Vinita Ruchi lineage. So Vạn Hạnh belonged also to the Vinita Ruchi. And he specialized in Dharani Samadhi. That is what we call by nowadays the Tantra, the secret teaching. This is a little bit different, because you see most of the monks at the time either teach the sutras or practice something, some liturgy or do something. But this master was one of the person who specialized in the Dharani. That is the we call by the Chú. The Chú means the nowadays the word you understand at all. Like you say the Amani Pami Hom, Amani Pami Hom, Amani Pami Hom. That was the sixth, they say that, the sixth big word from the Avalokiteshvara. That is from Kuan Yin. So they believe that if you keep on saying it, that will protect you. But Van Hay Master belonged to one of the poets who practiced this, and his poem were taken as prediction. He was like Nostradamus. Nostradamus was very renowned in Europe. He was French, a monk, a Christian monk. But he was taken like a clever young. That is, you know, he knew before everything. But he said, world, you know, in the transformed world. That is, you know, a secret thing. You have, you know, to dig it out, to find the meaning of it. People claim that, you know, he predicted everything. He predicted Hitler, he predicted the Second World War, he predicted the atomic bomb and everything like this. So Van Hay at the time, you see, that was in the 11th century in Vietnam. He was also compared to that. Like, you know, his poem was taken as prediction. But you see, Nostradamus was born later. Van Hay was at the 11th century. He died in 1018 with heart disease. Just passed away like this. And the second king under the Lee was Lý Thái Tôn. Lý Thái Tôn was also a fervent Buddhist. He built 95 temples, and he received the Tripitaka from Song Emissary. You see, that's different. Lý Thái Tổ sent Emissary to China for Sutra, but Lý Thái Tôn received Tripitaka from the Song Emissary. That is, the Chinese people had to bring the Tripitaka to him. He didn't ask, went over there, you know, to ask for them. So Lý Thái Tôn, you know, was respected. That's a little bit different. And he studied with Hiền Lão. Hiền Lão was one of the monks later, we learned later. And he called himself disciple of the seventh generation of Ngô Bồ Ngôn. You see, so the Van Hay Master was spread the Vinitaruchi. Now, this monk, this king, you know, Lý Thái Tôn, calling himself seventh generation of Vương Ngô Thông. And under his rank, there was many renowned masters like Huệ Linh Định Lương Hiền Lão. Now, Huệ Linh Master, he was born Lâm Khu. His name was Lâm Khu. He from the area Đông Phu Liệt, from Hà Đông. Hà Đông was one of the province, you know, just near Hà Nội. Hà Nội and Hà Đông is like, you know, Jacksonville and McLennan, or Jacksonville and Orange Park. So if you've been in Hà Nội, you went to Hà Đông, it's easy. Like, you know, sometimes you don't even know. So Hà Nội and Hà Đông is like this. So Huệ Linh Master was born there, and he was fluent in both Buddhism and Confucianism. Because most of the time, in the time, people know who want to become official, they must learn Confucianism. In fact, you know, they must learn Chinese and all these things in Confucianism to rule the country. You cannot use Buddhism to rule the country. Buddhism is religion. If you use religion to rule a country, it is what we call by a theocracy. Many of countries in the world nowadays, some countries in the world nowadays, they put in their constitution to have a religion to be accepted, to be the national religion. And that's wrong, because once they accept that like that, it is a theocracy. That is, you know, a government controlled by the gods, by their god, whatever. Theocracy means their religion controls the world. And since, you know, religion is something you have to follow it blindly, you cannot prove it with your sense. They call them metaphysics. Meta means above physics. The physics you have to prove with experimentation. But metaphysics, you just say that, well, there was the Buddha, there was Bodhisattva, there was the angel, there was the devil, and you cannot prove it most of the time. Because you, many times, you cannot replicate it. Confucianism is used to rule the country, and Buddhism is to deliver you from suffering. These are two different things. You want to have more money, you have to learn at school. You want to have a big house, to have whatever. You learn at school or in the world. But if you want to get rid of suffering, you have to follow the religion. Because sometimes if you apply the worldly things into the metaphysics, you'll be wrong. Like some people claim that, well, the more money you get, the happier you are. They lie, right? Like, you know, if you have $100 million, you don't worry about anything. Right? But so how come, you know, wealthy people, you know, keep on having suicide, killing themselves? What I mean here is that this monk, you know, he's both fluent with Buddhism and Confucianism. So he can mingle, you know, with the monks and also with the official at 70 years old. So he learned about both of them. He was not a monk then. But at 70 years old, very old, he learned with the great master and then practiced here. And then he was called a living Buddha by the public. He was advisor to the king and officials and died in 1063. The Thiền Lão Master was like the teacher of the king, Lý Thái Tổ, right? He was a disciple of Đa Bảo, and he stayed at Trung Minh Temple in Tiên Du, also in Bắc Ninh, Vietnam. Later, stayed at Từ Sơn, and he taught thousands of disciples. Now, Thiền Lão, you know, didn't get into the national teacher or pop things. He was only a monk, and he teach people. He taught people, including the king. But he didn't take any official title. So Thiền Lão, see, under Lý Thái Tổ. So in under these two reigns, you know, Buddhism flourished. And under Lý Thánh Tổ, Buddhism under his reign. A fervent Buddhist, he changed the country name to Đại Việt. See? Before, it was Đại Cổ Việt. Now it's Đại Việt. And he built a temple, Đại Hàn, like a Đại Hàn, Korea. Korean name is really Đại Hàn, Big Hàn. Đại Việt means the Big Việt in the time. And later on, they called them, they transformed, they changed the name to Vietnam. Vietnam means the Viet of the South. Lý Thánh Tôn built a temple with the 12,000 pound bronze band at Bảo Thiền, Hanoi. In Hanoi, there was a temple, they called them Temple Bảo Thiền. Tall, and then there was a bell. He built this bell, really big. This bell, you know, later on in under Quang Trung, you know, was meant to make weapons. Thảo Đường branch started under him, which was the third Thiền branch in Vietnam. So you see, we had two branch, Vinh Gia Ruchi and Vong Quang Thong. Now we start to have the third one, the Thảo Đường. Thảo Đường branch. Thảo Đường was the Chinese monk, disciple of Tuyết Độc, went to Champa, was taken prisoner by Vietnamese soldier and allowed to start the Thảo Đường branch. So Thảo Đường was a monk from China, a Chinese monk. He went with his master to Champa. Champa is the area of Nha Trang, Phan Rang nowadays. In Vietnam, there was a kingdom called Champa. Champa, no, in Champa, they venerate the Hinduism and Buddhism, both of them. If you come to Vietnam nowadays, you still see, you know, some remnants of this temple for Hindu gods and also for Buddhist masters also. So the Champa kingdom was at the time in this area of Phan Rang, Nha Trang nowadays. But of course, under the King Lý Thánh Tôn, he went over there, he invaded the country. He caught the king and people, he brought back, and among them, you know, there was this monk, Thảo Đường. But he didn't know that it was monk. The general, of course, you know, the king didn't come. The general brought them, and usually at the time, you know, the prisoner was taken and then was given to the official to become slave. That was in history at the time. When you were prisoner, either they kill you or they make you a slave. So this monk Thảo Đường, you know, became the slave under this official because he know the letters, he know Chinese. So this monk, you know, let him clean up. I mean, this official let him clean up the house. And then once, you know, he read, this official was reading some sutra, Chinese sutra. And when he come back, he saw some annotation on it. So, who dare to do that? And then found out that this slave did do it. So he asked him, and then he said, you know, thing, you know, he was really perplexed. So he brought him to the king. And the king asked him, he said, ma'am, I was monk from China, from which country? From Quang Trung, and my teacher was Tuyết Độc Trung Hiển. Tức Đậu Trung Hiển was very big, because he was the author of the Bích Nham Lục, with a collection of like 100 koan. Koan was like, you know, a subject. And then the Zen master, you know, start to discuss, to try to understand. You know what one of the koan? What is the sound of one hand clapping? You know it? Can two hand clapping, you understand, right? One hand clapping, easy. So why can't you understand? Is it one hand clapping like this? You hear the sound, right? It is not. So what the master say, you know, was not like that. I mean, nowadays, you know, you have an Apple company, right? You know Apple? What is in their slogan? Think different. Think different. That's it. If you just keep on thinking, two hands, one hand, you're wrong. So they don't mean that. So think differently. What I mean is that this Thảo Đường, he was disciple of Thuyết Độc. Thuyết Độc was author of this. So since his master was very renowned, everybody knows that. So the king, you know, make him, okay, allow him to start the Thảo Đường branch, which is the third branch of Zen in Vietnam. So Thảo Đường started with being a prisoner of war. Under the Lý Nhân Tôn, Buddhism under his reign, also a fervent Buddhist, he appoints Khodo master as national teacher. Now he makes him one national teacher again. But the queen, that is his wife, was also active in supporting and building more than 100 temples. Building more than 100 temples. Because you remember in the time, the king and the queen had their own money. They did. If the king, you know, wanted to build some temple, he can either ask, build this temple, and then they have, you know, to go and build the temple. But the queen, you know, she give money to build the temple. That is, she paid for the labor to build the temple. That's different, because the king and the queen at the time, they were omnipotent, all powerful. That is, if they want to have a temple built, a house built, they say, build me this, and then people, you know, have to go over there. Whoever, you know, dare to do something else, you know, will be kaput, right? So they have to sell their house, they have to bring their own labor to build it. But this queen, she paid for this in her own money, and building more than 100 temples. And there was also the great master like Viên Thiếu Ngộ Ân, who authored many books. Now you see, that's something different now. Because under this 11th and 12th century, they start to write the books. So, of course, you know, they have to copy them. In the time, they haven't invented, excuse me, the printing press yet. So they have to copy every book like this, by hand. The Viên Thiếu master was born Mai Trực from Long Đan. He was the nephew of Thái Tôn Quyền, disciple of Định Hương, later went to stay at the temple in the east bank of Thăng Long. Thăng Long was Hanoi. Okay, the name of Hanoi. You remember Thăng Long? Lê Lý. Because in Hanoi you have a lake. We call them the Lake Hoàn Kiếm. Hoàn Kiếm means returning the sword. Because why? Because the King Lý, there was a legend saying that when he started to fight back against the Chinese, he was given a sword by the gods, thing like this. So when he went to this lake later on, a big totem grabbed his sword and disappeared. So he called this lake, you know, Hoàn Kiếm. It's still in Hanoi nowadays. So, and then the king, you know, being at the middle of the lake, you know, a small temple. They called it Tháp Rùa. Tháp Rùa means the stupa for the totem. The lake is Hoàn Kiếm. It's very renowned in Hanoi. In fact, you know, when I live in Hanoi, I live just near, like, you know, from here to the Commonwealth. So usually in the evening, we stroll down to the Hoàn Kiếm to get some fresh air. You see, it's lake. So east bank of Thăng Long. Thăng Long means the dragon flying back up. Taught many people, died in 1090 at 92 years old. under the Lý Thành Tôn, which is the next king, the nephew of Lý Nhân Tôn. Lý Nhân Tôn, because without his descendant, Lý Nhân Tôn, he was born Buddhist, and the queen also support Buddhism. So somehow, no, they didn't have any son. So the nephew, his nephew, no, was appointed king. He was sick when he was a small. He was sick, and he was killed by the monk Minh Khổng. So later on, he appointed this monk Minh Khổng to become national teacher and being the Linh Cảm temple. Linh Cảm means the communication, like this, communication temple. There was many renowned monks under, like Minh Khổng, Thông Biện Bảo Giám, and especially Diệu Nhân Nhân. This is important. Disciple of Chân Khổng Master, being first nun of Vinsaruchi lineage. So under Lý Thành Tôn, there was the first nun in Vietnam. The nunnery, that is the woman, the disciple of the Buddha, stuck under this Lý Thành Tôn. This nun, Diệu Nhân, she was disciple of the Chân Khổng, among being the first nun, and she belonged to the Vinitaruchi lineage. Now, under the later king, that is the three last king, at the time, see, after the Lý, king had been present for a while, there was some usurpation. That is, some officials who were like good with the kings. They have a family. They have a son, they have a nephew, they have relatives. And then they start to band together. That is, they start to band together and then they usurp the power. That is, you know, like they control the country, not the king anymore. Because portion of the king were like a Buddhist. They are common Buddhists. They just went to temple, things like this. So the official took care of the politics. And once they took care of the politics, they networked with each other. They tried to get the power and then try to kick the king out. And the Lý Anh Tôn, disciple of Thảo Đường lineage, most renowned among Chí Thuyền, Am Chí Bảo Giám, and Viên Thông. Viên Thông, who was appointed national teacher. Lý Cao Tôn enthroned at 3 years old. See, because the king, you know, died without grown-up children, so Lý Anh Tôn, you know, was enthroned only at 3 years old. So he was controlled by the Hồ Hiến Thành. Hồ Hiến Thành, who was like a trustee nowadays, you call him trustee. He studied with Trương Tam Tạng, master of Thảo Đường lineage, in decadence with political power. That is, Buddhism start to go down nowadays. Politicians start to take up the power. Lý Huệ Tôn, usurped by Trần Thủ Độ, he abdicated to 7-year-old doctor Lý Chiêu Hoàng for monkhood at Trần Giáo Temple at 1224 and calling himself Huệ Quang Master, and he was forced to suicide by Trần Thủ Độ by hanging in 1226. That is, you know, he abdicated and because this the guy, Trần Thủ Độ, he forced him to relinquish the power to the daughter, 7-year-old. And this 7-year-old daughter was get married with one of the nephew of Trần Thủ Độ. That was forced marriage. And so the king, you know, went to this temple, this pagoda, and he became a monk and called him Huệ Quang. He thought that he could escape the death. But Trần Thủ Độ once, you know, saw him at the temple cleaning up the yard. He said, whenever you pull the grass, you have to pull on the roots. This monk who used to be king, he said, I understood what you mean. And then he went inside and he hanged himself. So that was the last one of the Lý dynasty. General view of Buddhism under Lý dynasty. If Buddhism had the most prosperous time during the Tang Dynasty in China, it also had the same under Lý Dynasty in Vietnam. He said that. For more than 200 years, Buddhism had the utmost position in every aspect. Moral, literature, politics, due to the support from the government and presence of great monks. Learn and think. Okay. So we finish the lesson good. Next week, we have a monk coming in. So if you can come to Bát Quan Chai, come to Friday and Saturday, and then the monk will come for the Buddha's birthday. For the Buddha's birthday on Sunday, you need to come in early at 10 o'clock so you can give the young Buddha, I mean small Buddha, a bath, like in the last year. nguyện đem công đức này hướng về khắp tất cả đệ tử và chúng sinh.